Good afternoon, and welcome to our April 2nd, 2024 Community Policing Podcast. Today with me, I brought back Hillary, Hillary Nussbaum, our co-responder, our social worker that works within our agency. And Wendy Ernzen is a community member who lives in Bloomfield Township. We're here today to talk about an important topic. Yesterday, April 1st, started Autism Awareness Month. Mm-hmm. And so we thought it was an important topic to bring about. I know, Wendy, you and your family had a really positive experience with our police department.
We did.
With your daughter who has autism. And I kind of literally just called Hillary before this because when we started talking before the show, that I know Hillary, before we hired on with us as a co-responder, worked in the school districts and has some experience with autism. And you and I again talked before about how important our CIT program was with some of the things that happened.
What's that acronym mean?
Crisis Intervention Team.
Oh, right. Okay.
And so our CIT team, I better know what that is, right?
Yes.
But it really was important on the time that we responded to your residents. And we talked about some goals and things that matter. And one thing that if anybody knows us as a police agency that I've talked about in the past is that we are very open to learning new things and learning and making our police department better. And what better way can we do it than to have community members share their experience, both positive and or negative when it happens. Luckily, in this situation for us, it turned out to be positive. But there's some things you learned and we learned that parents can do for their children if they are special needs or have autism or even somebody that may be in a mental health or severe mental health crisis. So I thank you both for coming onto the show, and Hillary,
Thanks for having me.
Wendy, let's start with you.
Sure.
I know, let's talk a little bit about our interaction with our police department.
Sure. So so I'll just tell you a little background about my family first, and then we can get into that. We live here in Bloomfield Township. We've been residents here since 2012. And my daughter is autistic, but also has bipolar disorder, which makes it a little bit more complex for her. So, I'm going to speak as a parent, not necessarily an expert, but my understanding is that there are now considered three levels of autism. Level one is one that requires minimal supervision. Level two is about medium. And then my daughter is what we consider level three. So that's someone that requires 24/7 supervision. Now, that doesn't mean necessarily that she can't be left alone in a room, at least not for her, but I wouldn't leave her alone with a stove. She may never drive a car, so things of that nature. In addition to that, she also has periods of aggression. And with that being said, we were in a place where that was happening. And it was a gradual place that we got to. I mean, my husband, I guess half jokingly say, we were frogs in boiling water. Just things over time just kept coming and coming up. And so, like, we got into a place where in the evening sometimes we would barricade ourselves for 2 hours in our bedroom.
Oh, wow.
And as well as our other child and her dog. So to allow my other daughter who has autism to exercise those behaviors and eventually calm down with an Ativan. So we were doing that for months, and it got to a place where finally that aggression had spilled into the community, and we knew we needed to do something different. And we started off by taking her to a local agency on a Saturday, which it didn't work out. And my daughter then remembered, so it was a healthcare agency that typically will take people with mental health issues, and they just couldn't handle her, and she had assaulted two orderlies. So in the process. So we didn't really know what to do. My husband had been on the board of the Autism Alliance of Michigan for 10 years, so we were concerned, knowing a lot of the stories, how people had other people had interacted with the police, so we didn't know exactly which next step. So we took a few days to think about it, and she continued to be aggressive, so we knew we needed to act. So I first contacted our ER department, or a local ER, and they're like, well, simply, we can't send an ambulance because we can't send our workers who are not trained for this into a combative situation. I'm like, well, what am I supposed to do as a parent? Mm-hmm. We're not safe either. So I did know about the co-responder program just from conversations, like with my husband being on this board, because it was very new, I think, at the time, because this was 2022. And you guys could talk more about this.
Yeah.
You know the history of the organization.
September 21 is, I believe, when when Hillary first
so this
took
was
the first case.
June of 22.
Okay.
And so I called the non-emergency line because I'm like, okay, I don't want to call 911 because it's not going to work. And I asked about their social worker, because that's what I knew. I'm like, I know you guys might have a social worker that shared. And they're like, oh, she's not here. She's not here today. Mm-hmm. So I said, oh. And so they're like, well, hold on. Let me talk to the chief and see what we can do, because, you know, obviously we want to help you. I said, great. Because what we wanted was the police escort to the ER, because at this point my daughter wouldn't go after her last experience a few days before. And so she was like, nope, I'm not going anywhere. I'm not leaving this house, because she was scared about, because she had anxiety. She just didn't know what to expect. So the two gentlemen showed up at the door, and they had to walk over all the stuff that was broken. But then they walked into her room, and Nicola had her space arranged, where she basically had like 300 or 400 of her stuffed animals all kind of face her, and she sits in the middle of them. And she wouldn't talk to anybody because she didn't want to go. And so the gentlemen, you know, they were trying to make small talk, and so then eventually they realized, like, her stuffed animals were all associated with movies. So they start asking her, like, oh, is this, you know, this Minion? Is this from, you know, the Minion movie? And is this stuffed animal? And they're going through, like, Nemo and all these different movies that they could remember. And they started to build this rapport, this trust with her. And it took time. It took at least 45 minutes. And then they, you know, one would talk to Nick. One would come out and talk to me, trying to figure out the next steps of the plan. And so finally, like, okay, you know, would you prefer that she rides with us or rides with you? Like, we don't care. We just want to safely get her to the ER. And so they asked her. And she's like, well, I'd like to ride with my parents, but yeah, I'd love it if you guys came. I mean, she didn't say in all those words, but that's what she said. So they rode alongside, and they escorted her into the ER, and she got into her room. And so after that, there's a whole another story on my podcast called Let's Plant Houses, where we talk about that ER experience. But I wanted today to really focus on our police interaction, which was, I felt, as good as it could have been. That's wonderful. So, yeah.
And we did start our program in September of 2021. And one of the things that when we selected Hillary that stood out to us, one was someone in her family had law enforcement experience, mm-hmm. Which was important at that time, so that when we build these programs, there's an understanding that, you know, we talked about on other shows where sometimes people thought there was this clash or this two different goals of what a social worker wants, mm-hmm. and what police want, or what we could do together. And to understand how the police culture is a little bit, we needed somebody. And so it was really a perfect fit, on top of we have such a strong relationship with our schools, yeah. Already here,
right.
That Hillary brought that with us, with her. And so it's ironic that, you know, 6 months in really is when you're calling, kind of for our assistance. Yeah. And unfortunately,
right.
She's only
right.
one person, so she wasn't there.
Right.
But
mm-hmm.
the importance of that is the training, or the lack of training we realized that our officers had. How many hats were we making them put on
right.
every single day, on from a car accident to a family trouble to, you know, an adult counselor for
yeah.
couples, or now we go into and we bring in autism, which we're not trained on.
Right.
And I know there's fantastic trainers out there for law enforcement for autism. Even in our local communities, that some of our officers have gone to. But we mentioned before the crisis intervention training, and while we may not have needed a full CIT because she might not have been in a behavioral crisis, the communication aspect behind
yeah.
that
mm-hmm.
is what really focuses.
Oh,
on that
was essential.
Yeah,
because with Nicola, it's all about trust, and
right.
and it helps to ease her anxiety, because that's really what makes her can make her volatile or make her comfortable. Just like anyone.
Mm-hmm.
She just expresses it a little differently. So, we were grateful for that focus on communication, because she probably wouldn't have gone otherwise.
And there's a whole section in our CIT training that we teach, which is a 40-hour mental health training for
mm-hmm.
police. And a lot of our Bloomfield Township officers have gone through it, but there's a whole section that we go through on autism to help police sort of understand, you know, hey, when you're coming onto a scene with someone who has autism, here's how to best approach, here's how to best, you know,
right.
come to the house, start communicating, those types of things. So it's nice to hear when that works out, you know,
right.
and you've had a very positive experience. So
right.
so happy to hear that.
And let's talk a little bit about that. Sensory is a really big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And so for a long time, officers responding to somebody with autism necessarily don't understand that maybe the color of some of our items that we wear on our uniform, or the badge itself, shiny, and or our loud radios, or
right.
if there's a lot of commotion going on, if the individual is elevated and is yelling or screaming, and then we yell and scream over the top
right.
to try to get the control, we're actually counteracting. What we really need to do is show that, hey, whoa, we got to bring it back to another level. And I'm sure in the schools, kind of one of the things you guys focused on that
yeah.
really can bring now to
mm-hmm.
help us understand better.
Yeah, there was, I mean, and you probably are aware of this too, right? There's a lot of different areas of autism that we focus on. Sensory, communication, behavior, mm-hmm. emotions. Those are the big four quadrants that we're really like focusing on to see kind of what's going on and where their needs are, you know, in those four quadrants. And so, yeah, the more that we can help our police partners like understand like how, you know, how can we best approach it, the better it is. What do you think worked well? Right. For the officers who showed up to your house?
Oh, for us specifically?
Yeah.
I definitely think that it was, they were quieter. Mm-hmm. So definitely they were addressed, they were trying to sense like the atmosphere, I guess, of the room, right? The vibe. And then of course, just trying to find the right language, right? Trying to find the commonality with her because she doesn't know them and they don't know her. And so they were trying to, you know, figure out a way that they could connect with her pretty quickly. So it was very valuable. And again, from my experience, having had this experience, rather, the thing that I would like to see is more communication before, because parents don't know what they don't know.
Right.
So we're going to start there, because mm-hmm. I certainly didn't know a lot of things. And there's a lot of things I'm like, oh, gosh, if I had known these things would have been different. So I want to give that information to parents, right? So, like, how can they start this relationship before with their police department? How can the schools get that information even in front of parents who don't know? Mm-hmm. That way they can say, like, for example, we knew that we had a behavioral plan and a crisis intervention plan as part of the school program.
Yep.
We never had one in the home, though. We just kind of did things. To our benefit, it probably would have been helpful to have a behavioral plan and a crisis intervention plan, because then I would know when I'm in a state of crisis what things I can do and what things I should do, because I've already thought about this when I wasn't.
And you're talking specifically behavior plan for your home.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah. I'm talking about for the house. You're
yes.
right. And so that helps any. So the behavior plan is an example. So it tells you, you know, the things that do and don't work with Nickel when things are not quite as heightened. Mm-hmm. That's great for caregivers.
Yep.
That's great for if you have intervention with police, if you have medical workers, whomever is going to work with your child. And before the show, I'm so sorry, you had showed me some kind of form, right? So I don't know if you want to talk more about that, how this could kind of dovetail into that.
So we have the ability, first we use what we call computer-aided dispatch, which is CAD. And so as part of our computer-aided dispatch, we're able to put alerts into that system. Mm-hmm. And many times those alerts are with people we've had behavioral crisis in the past who may own weapons, who may have been violent towards the police, who may have a... maybe an elderly person with dementia who walks away frequently. Mm-hmm. And so that information we are able to put in there. So when the call, when we put the address in automatically, you know, if we put in our address at the station, it's 4200 Telegraph, it would automatically alert the dispatcher that there's some information called premise information that you need to read. Mm-hmm. It's important for the officers responding to that call.
Right.
But also, we have a special needs emergency contact form that our personnel created not too long ago. That's available to anybody. And on there, there's a lot of information that can go on there. That is able to be scanned into we call it Power DMS, and then every officer on the road is able to pull that up in their car.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it would take time, so they could roll up to your house and pull up that up, and they might be reading some of it before
right.
they get to inside the residence, unless somebody's actively violent,
right.
Where there are a threat to somebody or themselves. But if somebody's in their bedroom, they're contained,
right.
they're not breaking things actively, the officer may have a few minutes to slow down and see what some of those commonalities could be. And after we talked today,
yeah.
I verified, like, with the special needs emergency contact form, we can actually put the home behavioral plan in there as well.
Mm-hmm.
So there could be a section in that, just a brief section in that plan that says police contact, right?
Right.
Or, you know, law enforcement or medical emergency contact, that they don't have to read the whole thing. They can just get to the bottom. This is what, in a 2 or 3 sentence thing, an officer is going to know when I go into the house. They have sensory issues.
Mm-hmm.
They have these things. They don't like loud noises. Maybe our radios need to be turned down. Maybe we know their favorite cartoon is the Minions,
right?
And then we can immediately go into that conversation with them. And again, I never even thought of that until you said the behavioral plan. You know, my spouse is in the education field as well and deals with IEPs and stuff. And the schools, you're right, they put all the time and energy into creating these plans so that the teachers and principals and caregivers
right.
at the school can effectively communicate with these individuals, but most of the time law enforcement's coming in the crisis. Mm-hmm.
Well, and those plans are distinctly different because the environment in your school is so different from your house. And so I will add another layer to that. Mm-hmm. So for parents who are like, well, gosh, it sounds all great, these plans, how do I do that? We didn't either know that. So like when we started this process, so the Autism Alliance of Michigan, so first of all, the Autism Alliance of Michigan is an incredible organization that can direct you to resources, but whether you're going through a diagnosis or you're looking for other resources. But anyway, they helped us figure out the Easter Seals of Michigan, who now is also a part of MORC. They'll do that. They sat down with us for 8 hours.
Oh, wow.
And put together the most detailed behavioral and crisis intervention plan after this happened, which ultimately helped us find supportive housing for our daughter, because you need that. That's like required to do the type of housing, because those caregivers need to know how to work with your yeah. adult child. Yeah. And so so I would recommend, if people were wondering how to get that process started, you could either start with the Alliance to say that you're interested in creating those types of plans for your home, mm-hmm. and or start with Easter Seals.
I would also say, too, if you're a parent, the important thing is to let dispatch know. Like if you have specific requirements or needs for your child and you know police are coming and they can't handle like lights being turned on, mm-hmm. or the noises of the sirens or the radios, let dispatch know, because the more information dispatch has, the better it's going to be.
Right.
So I think that's really important to put out there as well. One of the things that we focus on, you know, in CIT and with our officers, and we kind of talk about this all the time, is slowing down those scenes, you know. Mm-hmm. So we kind of get in the habit of, like, we get to a scene and we want to kind of move through it and get to the next call.
Yeah.
You know, like we have, you know, and with individuals, for example, with autism, we can't be like that. We have to really slow that scene down. So these two officers, for example, spent 45 minutes.
That's right.
Which is wonderful, taking that time, and that scene could have ended much differently.
Yes.
Had they not done that. So that's a really important thing for us to be doing.
Yeah, and our, you know, right. again, we talk about our co-responders, but the program's been up now almost, you know, this summer will be 3 years already, which mm-hmm. that seems crazy, but the repetitive people or the repetitive calls, they're now hearing, and they're here most of the time from 8 a.m. or, you know, 8 a.m., 7 a.m. till 10 p.m., I think yep. it is now still. And so Monday through Friday, there's typically, unless they're in meetings or some other training, that they're there and they're always monitoring our radios. So if they have repeat run-ins, they're able to get on the radio and say, you know, co-responders en route, and, you know, officers so-and-so, I've dealt with this individual in the past, here's, you know, if it's a brief synopsis of this will work if you get there before me. Mm-hmm. Right. And so those are important. I think these forms are important for many reasons. I mean, we do have nonverbal autistic children
right.
or individuals in the township
right.
that we may come across, and we're able to put a picture with these forms.
Mm.
That way, if they are nonverbal,
yep.
We are able to at least go through. It might take a few minutes, but we can go through some of them if we base it on the area to be able to pull up some photos, because they may not be able to get an address. Mm-hmm. And so I know it's helped us in the past,
yeah.
and it's great. And this is not only for, we have it also for our elderly residents who may, families who are facing dementia. But one thing that you talked about, and I think one thing I think we need to touch on for parents, is that frustrating part. You mentioned at the beginning that there's times you would barricade yourself into a bedroom.
Right.
And sometimes as a parent, there's no outlet. Right.
That's right.
It's hard. You don't want to say you need a break from your kids, but sometimes in a situation that's repetitive over time, you need a break.
You're
as
exhausted.
Well. And
yeah.
so sounds like the Autism Alliance
yep.
really has resources. I know our co-responders are more than willing. They may not have the answer right now when the phone call is mm-hmm. made, but they are willing to help try to provide those resources. And sometimes just be that ear that says, yeah. you know what, you're doing a wonderful job, it sounds like, with your child. And we're focused on a child. But your child, when we say that, they could be 40 years old.
That's
you
right.
know, and we could have elderly parents caring for a child that's, you know, now it's really when the roles are typically reversed, but they're forced still to be in it. There needs to be some kind of outlet.
Mm-hmm. So I will tell you, too, so you just brought up a great point about planning, right? So planning for the future. And a lot of parents, you know, they envision to have that child, quote unquote, at home as long as we can. And I used to work at the ARC of Northwest Wayne County. And so we would encounter this, and often there'd be families, their parents would be coming in at 65, 75 years old with their adult with a disabilities in their 50s. And they would be like, yeah, so we actually need to start thinking about transition. And we're like, because now they have a health crisis of their own.
Right.
They might have cancer. They might have anything. I mean, I don't know. They're getting older, and they can no longer manage taking care of this person with a disability. So there is a program called After I'm Gone. Parents can take it at any time. It's a series of workshops. There's 10 of those. I know the Arc of Northwest offers this. I want to say the Arc of Oakland County also offers some variation of this. But basically, it's a 10-part series that goes through financial planning. So, you know, how do I create a special needs trust? Why would I want to?
Yeah.
What's a MyAble account? Then you've got the pieces of, you know, housing. What are my options? Because there's lots of different options for supportive housing and independent living.
Yeah.
And those are different things. And there's different places that do that stuff. But anyway, it goes
even
through
respite, like
yes.
respite care.
Well,
I know, like Easter Seals Morgue.
They
we'll
do.
Do some respite care
they
too.
Do. Mm-hmm. And if you want that, just to be blunt, you need to get on a list, and it takes a long time because COVID kind of annihilated the caregiving program. I mean, it's really tough right now.
I believe it.
That doesn't mean it's impossible. Mm-hmm. But yeah, but you're never going to get it if you don't ask for it.
Right.
So you're absolutely right because that also takes time. Mm-hmm. So you have to start with Oakland County Health Network here in Oakland County. Mm-hmm. They have to evaluate that you are eligible.
Yep.
And then you can go to an entity like Mork, and I think there might be one other entity, might be CLS, but I might be wrong.
Yep.
But there's two entities that you
Correct,
can go
yes.
to talk to about respite and whatever kind of caregiving options, housing.
Right.
So if you start to get to that place, absolutely you want to be registered with those organizations.
And one thing that, as you guys are talking, that keeps pointing out to me is obviously Hillary and Courtney for us, and all the co-responders are actually contracted through Oakland Community Health mm-hmm. Network, right? And so it's just, there's so many partnerships
yes.
that kind of connect that until we did our program where we have these conversations, you don't realize
yes.
the circle that it truly is. And a lot of times it does start with that law enforcement piece. And I think that's what I just want to focus on too for a moment is this, the more, like Hillary said, the more information our dispatchers have,
mm-hmm.
the more they are. And we have to remember that our dispatchers who are answering those phones have families themselves.
Yeah.
And many of them have some of the same, you know, dilemmas or conflicts that some of the people are calling in.
Yep.
And so they do have the patience, they do have the understanding, and they want to ask questions. And sometimes it may seem like they're cutting off questions or answers because they want to focus on, we need to focus on what's occurring right now,
right.
not necessarily the entire history.
Right.
And so that's another thing is we want the information, but we need to know what's happening now because hopefully, be hopeful that this is not a situation where they're in a process of hurting themselves or others, that it's more likely they're in an episode and we want to come there and try to de-escalate it. We may get there but if it's an emergency, we're going to get there hopefully within 3 minutes. That's not for the caller and the dispatcher, that's an eternity.
Right.
For the officers, sometimes it's not enough time to get the information that they want.
Right.
Right? And they take pride into that. And, you know, we have members of our own agency whose children have autism
mm-hmm.
or different, you know, aspects of their lives. So it really humanizes the aspect of what we do as an agency. Yeah, we still have to respond and we still have to be authoritative at times, but not every situation is a dictatorship or, you know, authoritative. We got to come and, you know, we have to have that understanding of somebody that's in a crisis, especially somebody with autism. Their brains are operating different than mine is right now.
Right.
And we have to understand that.
Well, your goal is to keep everybody safe.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
And so as a parent, if you can, get that other information so you can use those 3 minutes to focus on the acute emergency.
Yep.
That's the best thing for everyone. So you have detailed information in case they have time to review it. But because that way you can focus that time on the emergency. That's what I'm hearing you say. Is that right?
Yeah. We want to be able to focus on what's occurring now,
mm-hmm.
And the officers can get a little bit of the history while they're there,
right.
But what our dispatchers need is what's happening now. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that background is important to the family because we want to know, have they assaulted police in the past? Will they be assaulted when we get there?
Right.
Are there things we need to do to prepare ourselves? And again, is there, you know, if the officers come in and they start, you know, one way they connected in the past was talking about our stuffed animals, well, that immediately is going to get me into the room,
right.
And I'm going to immediately focus on something that I can relate to or my kids can relate to that,
right.
You know, if I'm, you know, if you get an older officer who doesn't know what maybe Nemo is now, right? But they know what whatever is.
Yeah.
And so that's just important information for a successful conclusion. And Go ahead.
I was going to say, no, I think another important piece, and you had mentioned this before, is aggression. You know, some if we don't have a behavior plan in front of us, or we don't have something in premise, then we don't know necessarily what we're walking into, or that an individual has autism, which could be a problem. Because as law enforcement, and correct me if I'm wrong, when you see aggression, right? So we're going to handle that one way, you know, where if we know that this individual has autism, and maybe this is just part of, you know, what their behaviors are, or how they're communicating.
Right.
This behavior plan is going to be really helpful for us to know that, and then we can handle it totally differently.
Yeah, and you know, there's times where you go to a house, you have a large individual, or some of these individuals in an episode are superhuman strength.
Yes. Yeah.
And so recognizing that for an officer, and it never looks good when officers use force, let's be real, but sometimes grabbing a hold and detaining somebody to protect themselves and others is what has to happen immediately till we can understand what the level of, you know, concern is, or the level of aggression, because everybody's got to be safe. I mean, we have weapons we have to protect on our uniforms.
Yep.
But we want to partner with the parent at the same time and recognize that when we get there and we got to control the scene, we want to, you know, do it in the most with dignity and respect for that individual.
Correct.
But at the same time, still have to maintain that control.
Absolutely.
So, you know, it's a great topic to talk about, because, and I'm glad that you had a really positive experience, and
we
it's
are
something
too.
And it's something I will definitely bring back to our officers. And I think I truly believe you sent an email shortly after. And if it wasn't you, we had somebody, because I remember taking it downstairs and recognizing the officers that were on scene from where we're at. But I want to remind our community that the forms are out there. We'll take it back to, and it will be a conversation that we have with our school resource officers.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
You know, when they know of somebody that this information's out there, it is on our. I'll find out if it's on our website, but our community relations officer, but even our dispatch center, and that's one of the things. So we talked about before. Who do you call?
Yeah. That's right.
And do you call 911? Do you call the non-emergency number?
And what language do you want them to use?
Yeah.
When they call
the 911 and the non-emergency number, the same people answer the phone.
Okay.
It really dictates on what the parents feel is the emergency. If there's a situation where they're in their bedroom and they're starting to calm down, but you really think you need police help, then call a non-emergency is fine. Mm-hmm. If they're if somebody's in a fit of rage or in a moment where you just don't know, 911 is there for that.
Okay.
The information that's provided is crucial,
yeah.
Right? And so it doesn't matter if you're providing on a non-emergency or the 911 system. The information that's provided is what's crucial for the dispatch.
And I will go back again and say, as a parent, the best time for you to be thinking and asking those questions is when you're not in crisis.
That's
so
a good point.
You can sit down and think about what you, so that way when you're thinking, because when you're in that moment, and it's really hard to make a solid and easy, like a good decision. So I would recommend to all parents that's why those planning, whatever plan you want to call it, but having those questions, thinking thoughtfully about that, so that way you know which line, you don't even have to think about it. You're like, I'm calling this line or I'm calling that line, because I've already made the decision about what those boundaries or what my contingency is.
Yeah.
And our non-emergency line is 248-433-7755. But again, if they're in that moment of crisis or the parent just doesn't know, 911 is absolutely okay.
Right.
So I want to thank you both for coming on today. It was a fast show. Believe it or not, we've been almost a half hour already.
Yeah.
So those are when you know you have a really good topic.
Right.
And I know on a short notice, thank you for coming.
Of course.
And if there's anything from a police agency we can do, we appreciate the positive feedback. And just know that we're always willing to learn, to listen to our community needs, and better ourselves in responding to these types of incidents. So
that's amazing. Thank you.
Thanks for coming. Thank you for tuning in today to our Autism Awareness Month episode. We'll see you on our next Community Policing Podcast.